The first cell phone was demonstrated in 1973 by Martin Cooper. You know what wasn't demonstrated? Shared plans. Over 50 years later, you can save on one line thanks to Visible. When you switch to Visible, the wireless company that makes wireless Visible, you can get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon for just $25 a month, taxes and fees included. No hidden fees. No, really. You can look around for them. They're not there. Switch now at Visible.com. Save on wireless without the hassle. Switch to Visible today and save at Visible.com. Monthly rate on the Visible plan. For data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com.
Here's a quick question for you. How did you sleep last night? If your battle for a good night's sleep feels relentless, I have the answer. It's a podcast called Sleepwave, with meditations and hypnosis created to help you fall asleep. My relaxation techniques will help you feel calm and ready for sleep, with soft music that will help you fall asleep in minutes. Most listeners never hear the end of an episode. So search Sleepwave on your favorite podcast app and find out why over a million people have fallen asleep to my voice.
This episode of Beyond is brought to you by forhims.com, forhims.com.
Do not underestimate the power of PlayStation.
Hello and beyond. Welcome to a very special episode of IGN Beyond, our weekly PlayStation show. My name is Jonathan Dornbush. I am your host this week. I am joined by Brian Altano.
Hello.
Max Scoville.
Howdy.
And Insomniac Games is Brian Intihar. Hello, Brian.
How you guys doing?
We're doing pretty well. How are you?
Good. I'm doing really good now that the game's out.
Yeah, I could imagine it's been a strange time for you.
It's been a long journey. Now that the game is out, people are playing it. And they like it. So it's funny. I've been saying, am I more happy or more relieved? I think the beginning I was relieved. And now seeing all the responses and all the photos from photo mode, I think I'm very, very happy.
Yeah, I could really imagine. Of course, we are talking today, if you didn't notice by the set decoration and Brian's appearance here, we are talking about Marvel's Spider-Man, which
Oh, that's why I'm here? Yeah, I thought we were talking about other games.
Talking about the American press.
We could talk about, God of War.
Guacamelee 2 is another great PlayStation exclusive this year.
It's a big year, but we are talking about Marvel's Spider-Man. If you couldn't tell by Brian's appearance here, we are going a full in-depth spoiler cast here. We're going to be talking everything about the game, the biggest moments, our favorite crazy scenes, everything, the big character reveals. So if you haven't played the game or beaten the game especially, don't watch this yet. Come back after you've beaten it, because we're going to talk about a lot in spoilerific detail. And I really want to go through, obviously, from Max and Brian, your perspective about some of the biggest moments for you in the game, and obviously get some insight from you, Brian, on everything that happened. Just tell us all of the secrets.
All of them.
Can spoil everything about the game.
Sure, yeah.
Yeah, but so to start off, I figured the best place to start would be the end of the game.
That's always a good place to start.
Yeah.
Just like the memento approach.
Yeah, exactly. That's what I've learned to do storytelling from. No, I want to talk about the amazing, and not just the post-credit scenes that are in the game, the two very big post-credit scenes, but also just that final Doc Ock showdown. Final.
It's my favorite part of the game.
It is. So, first of all, I just want to know a little bit about that boss fight, because you sense the weight behind it, the scale of it.
Yeah.
What went into that fight?
It took forever. We had a lot of restarts and starts and stops and restarts. And I think the biggest thing we really wanted to... Our kind of philosophy of this game, we wanted to have a very story-driven experience. You know, even though it is an open-world game and you can kind of do what you want... I feel like when you're talking about Marvel, everything starts with story. Everything is about the story and the character. So we wanted to have a very story-rich experience in that main story, and we wanted to all come to a head in this final fight. And I think the challenge was, how do we make an experience that's testing you from a gameplay standpoint, but also almost as like a mini story, like it has its own arc. Like you see a very beginning, middle, and end to the narrative of that fight. The very beginning where basically Peter warning him, please don't do this. Otto revealing that he knew Peter was Spider-Man. And then it's finally that final confrontation when they're on the side of the building. There's a very nice arc to it. And it kind of sets up the very end of the game as well. And that really came together because of the team. It was the animators working closely with the programmers and the designers to make sure we have those interstitial cinematic moments within this, really tough gameplay challenge. So we had a lot of different scenarios, but it's funny. We actually, very early on in development, we had a concept image. This is way before anything. And we had an image of Spider-Man and Ock falling on the side of a building. And I kept like going back. I'm like, what if we just end on the side of the building? What if they fight on the side of the building? And we were like, it's not going to work. And then we finally went back to it for like the last phase of the fight. So I was pretty happy. I got that in my Iron Spider arm. So I was really happy at the end of the day.
Superpower. I mean, there have been, what, 7, 8 Spider-Man movies at this point, and they've all sort of found ways to introduce different villains that are almost increasingly over the top and kind of ridiculous. But I think what was really special about Dr. Octopus in this game was that you've sort of contextualized his pain and suffering and his descent into madness and coupled that with the fact that he was this very close mentor figure to a young person that didn't have one of those, that really, it just hurt, man. It really hurt the way it all came together.
For us, that was if you guys start talking, you see me smile. It's because you guys are saying things that we have said as a team, and I'm like, oh, they got it. It was a very conscious choice to do that. We knew right away the second mission in the game is you go to the lab and you see Otto, you're working for Otto, and you're like, all right, he's gonna be Doc Ock, and that there's twofold. One is we wanted to see if we could develop the relationship so people almost thought well, is he going to come die? Maybe he's not going to become the bad guy. Mm-hmm. Maybe he's going to become the good guy. And then also is, I think that villains are really hard to do. And like, they're sometimes harder to do than the hero. And it's very easy to just create someone like a mustache twirling guy who has really very simple motivations or no motivations at all. It's like, I just want to blow stuff up to blow stuff up. And we really wanted to give Otto, make him three-dimensional. And we thought that if we had a little bit more of a slow burn to his eventual... those final moments, or when he finally does become Ock, it would mean a lot more. And that was kind of the big thing. So so one of my favorite scenes is the part where they're juggling the tennis balls, because you finally see it's really that almost that father-son relationship, that final bonding of Peter basically saying, no matter what, I'm not going to leave you. You know, mm-hmm. You're not going to lose what you got up here, and I'm not going anywhere.
It's a villain that begins almost with good intentions. And kind of like, it's like Mark Zuckerberg sitting on trial, and you're like, he's like, I started a website so people could like their friends' pictures. And it's like, it's taken over the world.
Yeah, I think for us it was, and it was also like a great way. We talked a lot about the idea of worlds colliding, and we could see essentially Pete kind of helps create one of the greatest super heroes. It was like, there's, as you said, this character's been around for 50 plus years. He's been in obviously so many comic stories. He's been in 7, 8 movies. It's hard to you got to surprise people. Homecoming did it really, really well with, the Vulture being the dad of, the girl he likes. Right. So we had to think of a way to mix things up. And we thought, what better way to have Peter be working for one of his greatest heroes?
You guys did something really cool in the same way that sort of the Vulture thing. I'm like a old school Spider-Man fan, so mm-hmm. when I see Peter Parker's dating someone named Liz, I'm like, oh, that's Liz Allen. And then the second it's the Vulture's daughter, I'm like, oh shit. In the case of Doc Ock, there was enough stuff that you guys were doing sort of differently that I was like, maybe he's good. Are you going a superior Spider-Man direction? Yeah. What's happening here? Yeah. And it felt like you were kind of tapping into the Sam Raimi version, the Alfred Molina Doc Ock, but giving it more time to breathe.
I think we were. I mean, people ask me a lot, what were we influenced by? And I feel like we were influenced by everything. We were. I mean, obviously the original comics of the idea of the best stories are worlds colliding. Too, I feel like the Bendis books, the Ultimate Spider-Man series, was a good example for us to.
The producers applauding in
the. Oh yeah, he loves the Ultimate Spider-Man.
Yeah, it's great, and I think what Bendis showed, at least me. Was that you could bend the universe a little bit and change things up, and people who love Spider-Man will still be excited about it and actually really like it. And I just think that the relationships he develops is really strong. I think for Dan Slott, we actually spent some time in the early on talking to Dan. It was that Dan's stories usually sound really crazy at the very beginning. You're like, so Doc Ock is going to go into the brain of Peter. It's like, what? What's going on? Or everybody's going to have spider powers. And then over the course of the arc, you start to understand, you get really addicted to it. So, but of course, totally influenced by all the movies, the Raimi movies, Amazing Spider-Man, and obviously the MCU a lot. But yeah, I mean, I think what we saw there was that these two characters, Ock and Pete, are some ways very similar. and that there's a natural bond between the two. And one goes this way with what his powers are, and one goes the other way with his powers. Mm-hmm. So it just feels like they fit really well.
So you mentioned that the concept art with them fighting on the side of a building. Did you have sort of like a handful of like touchstone, like kind of core concepts you wanted to go back to?
Yeah, I mean, we early on was about just establishing the tone of the game, the voice of the game, and that was really, really hard. It was because. You know, a lot of people are like, oh, you're working on Spider-Man. Just it's super easy. Just add some quips and everything. It's going to be super easy. And I'm like, no, it's like actually really freaking hard, man. It's really, really tough. And we would just do a bunch of concept images to kind of establish the look, the feel of the city. What does Peter like feel like, look like, even from his body? You know, I'm sure you've seen a lot of pictures of his butt online from the photo mode.
It's a good butt.
It's a good butt. We spent a lot of time on that butt. But I think that... it was really about, and then we just kind of said, like, you know, let's just have some, like, really, like, more like inspiration pieces. So there was, we did a shot early on of Ock and Spider-Man fighting, and they were kind of falling on the side of a building. That City Hall event at the end of Act One was, we used that as an inspiration piece. Originally, actually, it was supposed to be Peter that was playing that part. But then when we started bringing Miles in, it was actually one of our designers, Austin and Brian. Brian's a really great people, by the way.
It's a great name. Yeah, you guys should get one.
You should totally get a Brian. And he was the one who's like, oh, this would be even better if it was Miles. And he was totally right. So we had a series of those kind of pieces that, and then we had a lot of stuff that just wasn't right. Like it just wasn't, it just was like, it was too dark, or it was just too, it just felt like it was hard to take the world seriously. So we kind of had to find our sweet spot. And we did that with the look of the city, the look of the game, the voice of the character. I think a lot of people like, well, he's really funny. Let's just have quips every 5 seconds. I'm like, we tried it. It sucked. Like it was not funny.
Right.
Like, you can't write that many. If your main story is 20 plus hours, that's a lot of jokes you got to write, and it just gets old after a while. So we kind of really went more like, okay, you know, it's going to work better, situational humor here.
I think you guys did a fantastic job of nailing Peter's sort of vulnerability as not just a young adult in a relationship. I mean, specifically when he's texting in this game, you're on the edge of your seat. Like, it feels real. Yeah. But when he...
That part where him and MJ are going back and forth.
Oh, God, yeah.
One of the most real scenes.
Scariest boss fight.
Yep. Yeah. But also the fact that, you know, so many modern comic book movies try to attempt this whole thing of like, he's got great power, but with that comes great responsibility and sadness. And I think with him, he still had a blast being this character,
yeah.
But there's obviously a weight to it. And there's trying to be in seven places at once and realizing you can't.
I think that's one of the challenges that we had was we wanted a story that was emotional, had high stakes, but we didn't want to just go so serious that, you know, you felt like it was a depressing 20 hours. Mm-hmm. And one of the big challenges was like, so we had this scene at, you know, the City Hall where there's this, you know, tragic death. And then, you know, Act Two picks up a week later at this funeral, and you're basically Peter's saying like, "I'm sorry, I feel responsible for your dad dying," to Miles, essentially, which he's not saying it, but he's metaphorically saying it. Mm-hmm. But we still have humor even after that. We find the moments, and that was a lot of trial and error, just figuring out pacing wise. Like, do you guys remember the scene where Peter's cooking dinner, and they're having like a pretty like she's like, "I want to be your partner," and they're kind of getting pretty serious. And then his alarm is like his phone thing goes off and he's all dressed up.
Mm-hmm.
And she's like, "Did you just leave all your
clothes on the floor?"
And then he brings them out. And like that was all added. That was something we added at the end of the scene. Like it was something we actually went back and we go, we think this would be a really good moment.
Right.
So we were always constantly like, it's funny, tone and voice were established very early. And we had to because it kind of set the pace for the game. But throughout development, we were always reevaluating the story, looking at the characters and finding those moments that we could kind of capture. And, you know, you mentioned the thing about vulnerability. I always think of Spider-Man and Peter as a little bit two different characters. Fortunately, played by Yuri Lowenthal, who did a great job doing both, is like when he's Spider-Man, he's much more confident. That's where some of the humor comes about. And he's perseveres. He's always going to triumph as much as he can. But there's Peter, he's much more relatable, he's more vulnerable, and there's like that awkward, like cutesy awkwardness to him, like where you're like, you're trying to be cool, but you're a dork, and we love you for it. And what was really awesome was that that's how we wrote it, but we never told Yuri how to play it, and he just naturally did it. And I even told, I hope he never really sees this, I told our writer, John Paquette, and our animation director, Bobby Coddington, I'm like, don't tell Yuri that. Just let him just keep going, because I didn't want to get him in his head. And he just nailed it. He nailed that kind of that those two characters, those two worlds colliding.
We interrupt this program to bring you a brief message from Hims, a new wellness brand for men. Here's a not so fun fact. 66% of men lose their hair by age 35. And by the time you start to notice hair loss, it's usually too late. It's generally easier to keep the hair that you have than to replace the hair that you've lost. So why not do something about it? 4hims.com is a one-stop shop for hair loss, skincare, sexual wellness, and other stuff like that that might be embarrassing to deal with in person. Luckily with Hims, there's no waiting room, no awkward doctor's visits, and you can save plenty of time by just going to a website. Hims connects you with real doctors and gives you medical-grade solutions to treat hair loss and other possibly embarrassing problems. And this isn't snake oil pills or gas station counter supplements either. These are well-known generic equivalents to name-brand prescriptions to help you keep your hair. Thanks to science, baldness can be optional. If this sounds like it would help you out, order now. Our listeners get a trial month of Hims for just $5 today, right now, while supplies last. See the website for full details, but this would cost hundreds of dollars if you went to the doctor or to a pharmacy. So just go to 4hims.com/beyond. That's forhims.com/beyond. Once again, that's 4hims.com/beyond. Thanks for listening, and now back to the show.
I feel like one of the characters you guys really nailed in this game is New York.
Yeah.
As a city. I've never felt more nostalgic for a place I used to live as playing this game. You guys kind of completely quartered that part of it that's A, daunting and terrifying and gritty and dangerous, but also just gorgeous. I mean, a lot of people talk about the web mechanics in this game and whipping around the city, and now it's this great celebration of Spider-Man, but it's a fantastic celebration of New York.
Yeah.
Like, you guys, you hit that point where it's like 5 o'clock, that magic hour where the light clicks in.
Sun's gorgeous.
And you know, the sun comes down, and it just really made me miss the city. So did you spend a significant time there? Like, how did you capture this? That's one of the toughest cities to really nail for a video game.
So I think that, thank you. A lot of the credit goes to Jacinda Chu, our art director. Jacinda Jacinda and I talked very early on about what we wanted the city to feel like. And our kind of philosophy is, let's treat it like a character. It has its own arc, has its own look and feel. It starts one place, ends another, and you see it gradually change over time. That was very important to us. And then it was really the environment team. And like, we had we had made Sunset Overdrive beforehand, so we had experience working on an open world game. So we kind of knew the building blocks, what we needed. And then from the look and the feel was really just the environment team. You know, some had lived in New York, some had been in New York, some had just were just living and breathing and, you know, all the different reference photos. But then I think the magic was that they worked really closely with the designers who were basically blocking out the city for traversal and everything.
Right.
So Josue and Tyler, two designers who worked on that really closely to make sure that not only did it look really good, but it played really well. And I think that our kind of goal was to, I never said, let's make it a one-to-one, because I think that would have just made it, limited us to what we could do from a gameplay standpoint.
Well, I'll be honest with you. I think the only game I've ever played that was like a one-to-one of New York City was True Crime Streets of New York.
Yeah.
And it just fundamentally doesn't work as a video game.
Like, as Eric from Marvel likes to tell me, he's like, there's not really alleys in New York. And I'm like, yeah, but they really make some great combat setups.
Yeah.
but I think Justin and I talked about was like, what's the New York that most people have in their head? From like either growing up and seeing pictures or movies or TV shows, let's give them that version and then put the Marvel onto top of it, and then obviously make it fun for gameplay. So like, you know, you'll see, you know, some areas where like, you know, the buildings aren't really that tall, but we make them taller, so it's better for swinging and stuff like that. So it's the long-winded answer to say is like, a lot of people worked up really hard on it. I'm super thrilled about how good it looks, and it plays really well. And like, I will tell you I'll say like, this was really important to me. It's like the most random thing in the world. I demanded that there were fire escapes. I was like,
oh,
that is one of my favorite
things. I was like, there have to be fire escapes. And the traversal team is like, you know how much of a pain in the butt those things are going to be. And I'm like, I know, but like, no one does it. They are a pain in the butt, but let's solve it. And thankfully the traversal team, like,
and the second you see him like thwipping up it, you're like,
no.
I had that happen in the E3 demo. I just stumbled upon it, and I jumped off the building and did it like five more times because that animation is just.
I remember, I think for E3 2017 demo, I said, when we choreograph this, when he's traversing after chasing after the helicopter, you have to go sidewall run over the through the fire escape because A, I know you guys worked really hard to make it work, and B, I want people to see it. Like, yep. I really want you guys to see that.
Sort of along the lines of the city, just touching on that subject, there are also, I do love that balance as someone who lived in New York of the realism of it, but also making it your own version of New York. And part of that comes with being able to seed it with just so many Easter eggs and so much of the Marvel universe in general, not just Spider-Man's.
Yeah.
How did you decide like where the line was of too much to keep to the New York people know, but also to throw all this in?
It was a constant thing. I think that, you know, originally I didn't know, I don't think we were going to have a ton of Marvel stuff in there. And then myself and Mike Jones, who's he's the vice president, executive producer on this game at Marvel Games. We were like, we need to go. We were seeing the game. We're like, we need to Marvelize this sucker more. And we did. And that's where like the Avengers Tower came in, the Wakandan embassy and all those fun things.
Is there stuff that people haven't found yet?
It's hard. I mean, I'm trying to keep up with my Twitter feeds these days, and like, I'm scared to jump on like the Reddit threads right now. I'm scared a little bit to see all the stuff, but I'm sure there is a couple things I think people haven't discovered yet. But I could be totally wrong by the time people see this.
Because there's millions of tiny fingers combing through your art right now.
Like, we talked about it. Like, you know, outside of just Marvel stuff, like I didn't know that our character artist Xavier modeled 3 chest hairs on the just shirtless Spider-Man suit that you can swing around with just like basically your boxers on. I didn't know he did that. And just there's a lot of little things in there that I think just add to the charm of the game. One of the things I really am proud of is that this feels like a game made by Insomniac. Like it feels like a Spider-Man game, but it feels like it has that Insomniac DNA as part of it. And I think all those little winks and nods are very Insomniac, and the game has a lot of charm and a lot of heart, which I think fits our studio really well.
Yeah.
It doesn't feel like you guys did a cover song or a licensed game.
Yeah.
It's just here it is, and Shrek Kart Racing.
I think the line, like the line was, I didn't want people to get false expectations about what the game was. Like, so Avengers Tower, right? You know, we debated like, well, can people look into it? Can people like see Tony walking around? And I'm like, here's what happens. If we do that, people want a mission with Tony Stark.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And then they want to see Iron Man. And then they want to maybe play as Iron Man. And I'm like, our job is to make the best Spider-Man game ever. Like, that's our job. Like, we want to give the ultimate Spider-Man experience. Anything that detracts from that is going to be bad. So, like, I didn't want to give people false expectations. And they're like, well, why didn't they just include Iron Man? Like, why didn't they do it? And
so, I got a question. This is kind of its own splintered corner of the Spider-Verse. This is the Insomniac Spider-Verse.
Yeah, yeah.
You mentioned the Avengers. They exist in this universe.
Yeah.
And Peter's like, maybe they're in California. Do you know internally where they are? Like, do they exist in that?
I don't know. We live in the West Coast, so I thought it'd be cool. You know?
There you go.
Yeah. You make a joke about how they're probably surfing, right?
Yeah. And, you know, well, I live about 2 miles from the beach, so.
Yeah, so cool. There they are.
Tony Stark surfing over there, maybe. Mm-hmm. Well, like, on that note, I'm super fascinated because
it's our Spider-Man universe, but there is a bigger Marvelness to it. You know, I think I didn't want to shy away from that. Like, I think it's even though our focus for this for right now was to make it a great Spider-Man experience. Like, the great thing about Marvel is that it is a larger entity. It's got he even makes things. He makes a joke about T'Challa, and when you take a picture of the Wakandan embassy, about did he get bit by a another type of something else, like a radioactive panther or something. I can't remember the exact line, but like those kind of things. We wanted to have that. Like there's something more out there.
Right.
Was there ever any, I'm curious about the discussion with Marvel Games, because obviously this is sort of, they've done, you know, the Guardians of the Galaxy game with Telltale, they've done Marvel vs. Capcom, but this is sort of the big first narrative push they've made since Marvel Games sort of rebranded. How is that conversation with them? Like, is there a lot of push and pull of, you guys want to include some things, they really want some things from the Marvel side, or, sorry, was that
I think it's funny, every single person asked me what's it like working with Marvel.
Yeah.
I mean, it's definitely, and I actually had dinner with them last night. It was really a very easy working relationship. It really was, because we really early on, like, that was a new group that was starting Marvel Games. It was a very, you know, Mike, Bill, Eric, and their boss, Jay Ong. Like, it was all a very big group. And kind of the thing we all said to ourselves, we didn't say it a lot, but we said it in the, kind of the very beginning, and kind of all stuck with us, was, this is our Iron Man. This is the start of this big narrative push.
I like that a lot.
Yeah, so that's awesome.
Makes me really happy.
And it wasn't like, I'm not thinking like 20 games ahead or anything like that, but like we knew from their standpoint, they wanted the game. They wanted a game that really said, "Hey, here's what this is what when you play a very story-driven Marvel games experience, this is what you're going to get." As Insomniac, we said we've been a developer for 24 years, 25 next year, which is crazy. We're working with one of the most iconic characters in pop culture. We want to deliver the experience you've been waiting for. And then same thing with PlayStation. This is an unprecedented partnership between all three groups. We want to knock it out of the park. And as we talked about before we got on camera was the first party titles. We want Spider-Man to be thought of in the same breath of God of War,
right,
and The Last of Us and Horizon Zero Dawn. And, I'm sure Ghosts and Last of Us 2 will all be in Uncharted 4. Talk about a lineup. Holy crap.
Well, they already used the Spider-Man font on the PS3. So
DNA.
So I think that it goes back to the idea of like, make the best game we possibly can. And like I said, like make the Iron Man. Make that first one that's going to basically give people what they want and what they expect from these types of games. Because these characters are, we all love them. We all love these characters, right? We all want them to be represented in the right way, whether, they've been represented so well now on screen, obviously along in comics. And we want to see the same thing through games. And, and you've been seeing Marvel games as, with the deal with Telltale. And now, obviously they have other games in the works. Hopefully those expectations you're going to see.
I appreciated how you guys sort of used the various, kind of repertoire of suits to bring in every generation of Spider-Man fans.
Yeah.
Like me, I'm old. And so when I was playing,
Yeah,
I was playing with the very simple, very original, very iconic Spider-Man costumes. When I hit level 41 and I unlocked the animated Spider-Man costume and I just started texting everyone I knew who were like, they were like, stop spoiling things for me.
Yeah.
I did not take that off for the rest of the game because it was just incredible.
Yeah.
And it almost added this weird kind of like Roger Rabbit effect to the game where there was real human characters going through things and then this cartoon comes in.
Fantastic. And that was really a suit that our character artist Gavin, the character artist Gavin, thought was cool. He actually worked with one of our tech shader artists who was able to pull off that look, and they were able to do it. And of course everybody saw it in the game. They're like, so can we just make the whole world look cel-shaded? And I'm like, guys, we got to ship this game.
Yeah.
We just got to make it. We got to get done. I literally have no idea if that's even possible. So please, the people
give you
don't
20
ask,
bucks for that DLC.
People don't ask me. I don't know if it's possible.
I was going to say, if there is a button you can push, I will totally do that for my next playthrough.
If you can save it as just dots.
Give me
a Doc Ock with the Elton John shades.
But, the suits are like, that was like the debate of a lifetime. Like, which suits are we going to put in? And obviously there's some I know people are like, why isn't the black suit in there? Mm-hmm. And there's a reason. There's a reason why the black suit's not in there. And there's stuff like that. But it was really the first opportunity. I think the other thing was, his first opportunity to bring the MCU suits to a console Spider-Man game. Like no one had seen the Stark suit or the makeshift suit or the obviously the Iron Spider suit. So it was nice to kind of have we had the blend of the MCU. We were lucky enough to, at Marvel Studios was like, go for it, which was awesome.
Right.
We had our favorites and we thought fan favorites from throughout the years. And then we also had some original stuff. And the great thing is, this is just the beginning. We're going to be adding new suits to DLC throughout the time.
The Iron Spider suit, when I unlocked it, before I unlocked it, I was like, this looks awesome, but how are you going to use this in the open world? Is it going to mess up traversal? Because you have hit detection and collision that works around this one character. And then I got into a combat scenario and filled up my meter and clicked the sticks, and those just metal arms popped out. And I was like, holy shit.
Okay.
It just started hurricaning people.
So I had, really early on, I had mentioned, I thought, we should do the Iron Spider arms. I was we need to do it. I also thought maybe that'd be a cool way to, somehow involve with Ock or something like that. Like, is he taking similar tech or whatever? And then it went away for a long time because we've got to make traversal fun. We got to make combat fun. We got to build all these freaking missions. And it's like, okay, then we table it. And then suit powers came about. And I was like, okay, maybe there's hope. Maybe there's hope. I'm going to get my Iron Spider arms. And we started working on all these suit powers. And I just found out we were gonna do the Iron Spider suit, and then I was like, I bet you they're gonna do those arms. I bet you they're gonna do those arms in the movie. and letting you know they did the arms. And I was like, and then I kept poking Josue. So you're gonna mention, I mentioned Josue a lot because Josue is like one of the guys on the team. It's like he likes the craziness. He'll embrace the craziness. And he was one of the guys with working on superpowers. And I said, Josue, what do you think we can do it? And he did like a little mock up. And he got him working, and then we convinced the combat team to do it. And then we had an animator who was really, really into it. And then I got my Iron Spider on. So you can probably guess what my favorite superpower is.
Exactly.
The focus meter that increases and restores your health. That's clear. I love that attention to like taking all of Spider-Man's history into focus for this game, but also sort of establishing your Spider-Man's place in this history.
Yeah.
Having that relationship with Marvel and being able to have him as part of the comics universe now, as well as within your own game, must be sort of a surreal...
Yeah. I mean, I can't believe he's going to be in a comic.
Yeah.
Like, what? Like, I was at Comic-Con, and I was waiting to do, like, something at the Marvel booth, and they had a one of the... You know where all the artists and the writers do the signings?
Yeah, Artist Alley.
And they had, like, they were, like, the backdrop was, like, this big thing where I think, like, Marvel keeps all, like, their water and all that stuff. And on the side of it was Spider-Geddon. And I saw our Spider-Man, like, leaping out, and he had the big white spider, and I'm like, this is freaking crazy. And then when I was traveling for work or something like that, and the Marvel guys were sending me like samples of the issue and art, and I was like, oh my God. And then like last week, Marvel released like this big panel like of all Spider-Geddon, and like he's like front and center, white spider and everything. And I'm like, this is just... Like, can you imagine if I had said, like, to my 7-year-old self, like, you're going to work on a Spider-Man game and one day he's going to be in the comics? It's just...
Yeah, it's surreal.
Like, I probably said the word surreal, like, more in the last 2 days or, like, this, like, than ever. Like, it's just, it's been, like, I'm trying to soak it in because, you know, when you make these games, and make any game, but especially something that means something so personally to you, you're always just worried about screwing it up.
Mm-hmm.
It's not going to be good enough. Oh, my God, what am I going to do? So you really... take a time to like step back and enjoy it. And it's finally nice to kind of like, you're like thanking me for being here. I'm like, no, it's nice to finally be able to just like breathe and just say like, yeah, this is really, really awesome. So thank you for letting me like kind of like enjoy it a little bit.
Anytime you make a Spider-Man game, you're welcome back.
Yeah.
I think that's the big thing, right? Like when you guys made Sunset Overdrive, you're like, we have this wholly original property, this new thing. We're making this brand new thing. Spider-Man's a different story because everyone, like I said, with the suit thing, everyone has an idea of who that character is to them. Their version is the Raimi version or the 1970s animated version or whatever it is, you know, or the modern version with the Iron Spider.
Our lead writer, John Paquette, rips me off when he tries to steal this line, but it's really my line. I said, the best thing about working on Spider-Man is you get to work on a Spider-Man game. And the worst thing about working on a Spider-Man game is that it's a Spider-Man game because everybody has their own opinions. Like the team was like, well, I wanted like this. I want it like that. I want it like this. And what I found out was I was naive in thinking that, well, everybody's just like me. They grew up on the comics and the cartoons.
Mm-hmm.
Then the movies came out. And probably got more back into stuff as the character got bigger. Because, like, I think, I don't know, I kind of had my, like, ins and outs with comics over the years. And, like, obviously, you know, kind of, and then obviously, like, in the last, you know, probably 20 years, really got back into it. But I was like, everybody's like me. And I was like, no, some people never watched the cartoons. Some people only ever saw the Sam Raimi movies or they only got into things on the MCU. Like, we have I would say the majority of our people I work with are like me, but and I think that's just like everybody outside our studio. So we had to say, okay, we have all these different entry points to the character. What are the common traits? And it really goes back to two things: those worlds colliding, and those two personalities of Peter and Spider-Man. If we represent that right, all the I wanted this, I wanted that will kind of be minor,
right?
Because you got to get the major stuff correct.
Yeah.
So we had Ted Price on, Insomniac CEO. He was on Unfiltered show, and he talked to Ryan McCaffrey about how like this whole thing came together, and like Insomniac wanted originally to kind of do their own thing, and then the second it was like Marvel's being like, you can do a Marvel game, and it sounded like everyone inside was really excited about that.
Nuts.
And was there like, did they kind of give you guys carte blanche about which Marvel character to work with?
Yeah. So the way it went, it was that Sony approached Ted and said, "What do you think about working with Marvel?" Sorry. I'm not getting choked up. I'm and I think that everybody asked me, you know, you've been on Insomni for 10 years. Why so long? I said, because of Ted Price. Ted is the best leader you could ask for. And I think one of the things about what makes Ted and Insomni so great is that it's a very collaborative studio. It's a very open studio. And what Ted does is he's not going to have us work on something we're not excited to work on. So he asked some people about what would it be like working with Marvel and Sony. And we got excited. And but then I remember we had a company meeting. We have those company meetings every couple of months or something. And he's talking about maybe future ideas. And they just put the Marvel logo on the screen. And you could literally hear everybody go. And I was like, well, working on a Marvel game. I think the idea of working on Spider-Man was pretty much a no-brainer. I think it was for us, it was like, what character do we think we identify with more than anybody else?
Did you guys have like a second choice?
No, not really. not really. I know everybody wants to know what the second choice was. I think it was, I remember saying to Ted, I'm like, we have to do Spider-Man. Yeah. We have to. I think he fits our studio really well from his personality, the heart, the humor, the mechanics, especially coming off Sunset Overdrive.
Mm-hmm.
I remember reading a Sunset Overdrive review, and I wish I knew what it was, but someone said, I would love to see Insomniac make a Spider-Man game. And I'm like, see, that's what we should be doing. And I think like, I think there aren't a ton of independent studios that are making, you know, big console games these days. So, we kind of think of ourselves a little bit as the underdog. And I think you think of Peter and Spider-Man, he's a little bit of an underdog. So I feel like we fit really, really well together.
And so how long did it take you guys to make this game?
Long, over 3 years.
Which, like, I don't make games, so I have no idea. But which
long.
Seems like you made, like, it's a long time to make a game, but it's also, it's kind of just incredible that you made this incredibly polished thing that feels like it's been, like, it feels like you had an engine going for a long time and you had built that city for a long time. It feels like a game that's almost on its, like, second or third iteration.
Thank you. Thank
like,
you
there's
very
a
much.
Lot of stuff that you got just perfect, which
thank
is
you.
Really
thank you.
Impressive.
I didn't know we could swear, so boom, I'm gonna swear now.
They get they. I try not to.
No, I'm kidding. No, I won't.
We write down.
I
you can.
I won't. I won't do it. even though I got a really bad mouth. I think that it comes to a couple things. Our engine keeps getting better and better thanks to our core team. I think that working on Sunset really helped us a lot because we had never made an open world game before that, and so understand city construction. If you guys see Sunset's world compared to this world, this one's so much bigger.
Right.
Because it had to be, because this character moves way faster than the Sunset character. So we had to, you know, had to deal with streaming. But having all the experience of what, you know, all those technical hurdles we had on Sunset, we could apply them on Spider-Man. And then also it's much more realistic looking than obviously the very stylized Sunset Overdrive. And I would say thank you because it takes a while, but I mean, some things like, you know, I think world construction really was pretty quick. Traversal came online sooner, but like we hadn't really made a lot of melee based combat systems before, so that took longer than mm-hmm. I would say some other things. But end of the day, like it's one of the things I'm easily most proud of because it felt so Spider-Man and it felt Insomniac with all the suit powers and the gadgets.
Right.
So I think that it's just a lot of iteration and constantly playtesting internally, checking ourselves. Really, another thing is leaning on PlayStation and Marvel for feedback. Like we have great producers at Sony, Connie Booth, Grady Hunt, Mark Cerny. They constantly giving us feedback. R and Joe as well, constantly playing the build every few weeks, coming in with lots of feedback. That was it wasn't like, wouldn't it be nice if it's like, no, this is actionable stuff that's actually make the game better. Same thing on the Marvel side. You know, we would bring people in, just go, can you just try this out?
What did that first build look and feel like? Was it like a wireframe skeleton Spider-Man in a blank city with no polygon textures?
Okay, so look at imagine like just boxes of gray and a really rudimentary Spider-Man with not many animations. Just pendulum swinging.
And he's just swinging.
But those webs still attach to those buildings, though. They definitely attach to those
buildings.
That
was a key point from the jump then, right?
Right
to make sure that they have pivot points.
I think the two things we said were no origin story and those webs better attach to the buildings.
Yeah.
That was the two big things.
Which when you get to Central Park and they don't, you're like, oh, wow, they thought of
that. Yeah, we did.
You have to wait for those trees.
Yeah, we definitely did, yeah.
But speaking of sort of the no origin story folks, for you guys. One of my favorite things about this is that this is a Spider-Man who's 8 years into his career. Like, this is a lived-in world to that. And I'm curious a little bit on one aspect of that when it comes to the villains. Like, how did you decide what villains to incorporate at this point in his career, what villains he's faced before? Do you have, like, a detailed backstory of those years in the past for him?
Yeah, so I think you see a little bit of that in the collectibles, the backpacks. On Sunday, I did all the backpacks again and all the towers because I was petrified. You guys were asking me like very detailed questions about the backpack.
I was going to ask you specifically about the, he has a, like a, what looks like a PlayStation Vita.
We had to, come on, we're published by PlayStation.
We there we go.
A little bit of a nod. Come on. We owe them a lot. And I before we answer that question, I want to say like, this game is not possible because without PlayStation, they are like, you know, a lot of people ask us what it's like to work with Marvel, but PlayStation is really, the thing that made this all come together. So we owe them everything.
Why didn't you say it's like a Sony PlayStation Vita? It's like
I don't know. Listen, putting these games in at the end, it's hard, man. I probably wasn't thinking. Like, there's a couple of things I'm just like, I can't play. I didn't think of this. That's probably one of them. What was the question
again? The backstory.
So I'll start from the very top. So I knew we didn't want to do the origin story right away. I was like, and I honestly, it was like really like reading like old, like just reviews of games and movies and stuff like that. And we said, okay, the very high concept is the best stories are when Peter's and Spider-Man's world collide. Mm-hmm. Okay. We know we want to do that right away. It's something Bill talked about really early on. We embraced it. We looked at all the comics. That's the best stories. Then we said, okay, if he's not 15, what's another time in his life that would be interesting? And we said, probably married with kids. Probably a little, and obviously, you know, some of the comics have had troubles with that. Though Renew Your Vows is really good these days. I think that what's a time in everybody's life that they can identify with? And what we really said was, okay, this is going to be a great superhero story. Sorry, it's going to be a really long-winded question answer. It's a great superhero adventure, but it's also a very human story. Like that was that was something really, really important to us. And I feel like that's what makes the best Marvel movies. Like they're really great human stories. And we said, okay, well, where can we get that from? And I said, well, man, for me, it was, I remember the first time when I went to graduate college and I was on my own, paying my own bills, my first job, trying to make a name for myself. My relationships from high school friends and college friends were evolving, changing. That'd be an interesting time for Pete. Okay, that's what we want to do. Which characters would help us that idea? So I was thinking like, well, when it comes to friendships, relationships, were those people MJ? Let's do that. Okay, well, how can we make her, how can we get this idea of partnership going? Let's put her in the role of Daily Bugle. Okay, so I remember looking up to the editor-in-chief and the executive editor of my first magazine I worked for. Okay, we need that mentor-like figure. What could be a mentor-like figure? Well, I don't want him working at the Bugle. I want to be a scientist. Who are some of the best scientists out there? Is it Dr. Connors? What if it was Otto? They're so similar. That's how it kind of came about. So it's kind of like really, really high level and then getting down. But I will tell you, like when we first started working on it, I was like, oh, we're going to have this character and this character and that character and this one and this one and this one. And I'm like, yeah, it's not going to make any sense.
So you mentioned touching on the Ultimate Comics, and one thing I love in that is that there are some characters from the sort of like the you know, Ditko Lee run, which are just goofy. And you threw in the Lizard and Mysterio as cameos at a frat party, which I feel like is how do you ground those characters? And that's a pretty good way of doing it. But them being there means that they do exist in this universe.
There's even backpack collectibles related to those guys as well. So
I really appreciated how you handled pairing off the boss fights for the Sinister Six.
Yeah.
Because there was a moment, and I really liked the game, but when I was like X amount of hours in, I thought it was going to be one of those sort of like Wind Waker like Triforce quest missions.
Yeah.
Where all of a sudden a bunch of beacons go up on the map and you're like, oh, you have to go hunt down each single one and it's going to, you know, this is going to be a whole thing. And instead you just you made this mixtape where you took all these powers and paired them off against Spider-Man, and it created some really intense and really fun boss fights.
So that wasn't the original plan.
Interesting.
Ooh. It was not the original plan. At the end of the game probably went through a lot of changes. One is there was probably a little more content. I know some of the feedback was like, oh, I wish I had more time with some of those other villains. And we had planned it. It just, the quality of this, like the game was really big. And I was like, at the end of the day, like we talked about make it the Iron Man, make it high quality. And it just wasn't working really well. Originally, you fought those guys. I think it was always planned to fight Scorpion and Rhino together. It wasn't the original plan to have Electro and Vulture together, but it was designers kind of working on, like, how do we make all this work from a pacing standpoint? And I think it was Joel Goodsell, one of our senior designers, and maybe Adam, one of the designers. It was anybody but me, so I can tell you that much. And it was like, well, what if we put them together? Because they're both kind of aerial guys. Imagine it was like more of an aerial fight.
Right.
And it worked great. And I think what the fun part is when you set up with a development challenge of like, how do we do this? How do we get it done? How do we get the quality? And a better idea comes up because of that. That's the fun part of development. That's the really, really fun part. You're like, I don't know how we're going to do this. And it actually got better. So, and also we thought, and then kind of coincidentally, it worked well of like, well, hey, he is 8 years older now. He has been doing this for a while. We should do more like 2v1 boss fights. That's more of a experienced Spider-Man kind of.
He can handle this.
Yeah.
Also, it like bucks the expectation because like if you have Sinister Six, it's almost like it's like a Master Robots kind of fight.
Yeah.
Where you're like, oh, there's one for each element or whatever.
Yeah.
And we
had talked about maybe letting you like really early on, like, okay, and in the last act, like there are all these villains out there, maybe letting you kind of do it on your own. But we were having, I would say it was a little bit of a challenge from a narrative perspective. And we really felt like the story was really, really strong. So just let's keep it a little bit more focused and stuff. So, yeah, it was just one of those things as we do through development, things change a lot. And we got a lot of feedback, like the Scorpion mission, the hallucination stuff went through a lot of iterations. Mm-hmm. I mean, I probably can say every mission went through a lot of iterations, but that was one of them that definitely we had a good idea. It was started really, really, really well, had some hiccups, and then boom, it kind of like took off.
Was that your sort of your take of going like, hey, we want to do something like kind of weird and sci-fi?
I think we wanted comic booky. And we wanted to break it up too. We wanted to break it up. Like, and we talked about having emotional high stakes, but having some humor. So like at the end of that, he's in his underwear. You know, like so we wanted like, even though it like stuff is going bad. We wanted to remember there's moments of levity and it's okay. And we even like edited that down to make sure it didn't feel like too long and too cheesy. But I think that's kind of what some like the Marvel movies have told us. Like even when like things are really, really bad, they find the perfect moments for that humor. It really kind of cuts it before it feels super dark.
Mm-hmm.
Were those villains who, so I love that, as you were saying a little bit earlier, that you give time for Mr. Negative and for Doc Ock
to
grow
and evolve.
To let them really actually become characters.
Yeah.
But in addition to having all those, the other villains that Spider-Man fights in the game, were there villains that you guys really were like hoping to get in there that made it late into the game that didn't last? Or were there some that you're like, we should hold off on this for now?
Yeah, I think, let me think. There was, I'm trying to think of who they were. Because we might, you know, who knows? They might maybe show up in DLC or something.
Of course.
Let's see.
Yeah.
There's at least four others.
I was hoping you were saying six.
Yeah.
Just be another Sinister
Six. Sinister Six.
No. I think there's about four others that we were talking about that, you know, it's just, you know, you start, you know, looking at the game, you're like, we got to get this thing done. And
it was, right.
No. And like, I don't think they got beyond maybe concept phase. And it was just too much. And I think it was good because like it allowed us to put more time like Tombstone and stuff like that, which I thought was like a really fun character.
I love that whole.
I think we could have done more.
It's completely optional too.
I think we could have done more with that, stuff like that. So we just pick and choose our battles. And I think the one thing is like, I know some people have favorites, just like they have favorites of the suits. You know, we'll see. That's why we have, you know, we have DLC.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, yeah, we have all that coming up. I did want to talk about. Going a little bit further back into, aside from the villains in Peter's life, you were talking a little bit about the Spider-Man and Peter Parker juxtaposition and how that creates the best stories.
Yeah.
On the Peter Parker side of things, Miles plays such a really big, awesome role in this game.
Yeah.
I didn't expect going in.
He wasn't originally going to be.
And yeah, you were mentioning before about how that town hall scene, the city didn't have him in it. Can you talk a little bit about his evolution in the game?
Sure. So, as a Spider-Man fan, when the Miles books came out, I mean, I thought it was really groundbreaking that they did this. And I thought that this was a great character. And then I kind of just like, you know, just was reading the comics. But I said, you know, right off the bat, we wanted to make this a Peter Parker story. And then, you know, originally he was just going to be a tease in the credits. Just like maybe he's, you know, following along what happens, he turns his head and someone says Miles or something like that. I don't know, something like that. And then as we kind of were pushing more of this idea of a unique Spider-Man universe, I just happened to be reading the Miles comics over a weekend and I said, this character is so damn good. And I said, well, what if Peter and Miles existed in the same universe? It's not like he's coming through a portal or something like that. It's like, no, like he's 15 years old. He's a huge Spider-Man fan and he just exists. What would that be like? And I proposed it to Bill and Mike and Eric, and they were like, this sounds great. And I think it was also for us, it allowed us to give a different perspective on the superhero world. Whereas we had somebody who, you know, like MJ was, you know somebody who's a superhero and is part of that world. Whereas Miles is someone who doesn't have superpowers yet, but is a fan of that world. And I just thought it was a different perspective. And I think that whereas we set up Peter and Otto as the mentor mentee, you know, you're starting to see that come together with Pete and Miles, and I think it's a pretty interesting dynamic. And I wanted people in, you know, the origin of him is different than the one in the comic, and we thought right. This would fit well within our universe.
There was that good sort of, I think it's like one of the best things that you guys do throughout this game, and everyone, you know, praises the combat, which is fantastic, and traversal, which is amazing, and New York and Spider-Man and all that. But it's, to me, the key themes here are, you know, sort of subverting expectations and also appeasing familiarity.
Yeah.
And those are very hard things to balance. And I think even to the very end of the game, where you introduce like some symbiote stuff, where you're kind of like, well, that's not who that goes with, but it's stuff that we all love that we want to see.
The black goo.
Yeah.
Yeah.
that's the scientific term for it.
I call it black goo. I don't know if it's a symbiote or not. I don't know.
Yes, you do.
No. You'll figure that
it's
out.
It's Nickelodeon right? Gak.
Yeah, I guess. Yeah. I mean, but he's in a tank of green water, so I don't know what it is.
Well, I mean, we can just let's just jump right into those post credit scenes because those two scenes. Obviously, we can speculate. If you need to shut up for a minute, I understand.
But your
if
question,
you can't say anything. Mm-hmm.
Like, yeah, it was like we had to. We talked about it earlier. We weren't just going to take, you know, a 6-issue arc from a Spider-Man and just bring it to the game. Like,
right?
You've read it. You already know what's going to happen. It's really hard, like I said, when you have Otto in there and you're like, well, okay, he should become Doc Ock, but how does he become Doc Ock? And like the relationships and like you see Miles in there, like, is he going to get bitten by the spider or not? Like it was kind of trying to keep people on their toes a little bit, but at the end of the day, kind of hopefully giving them what they want in a unique, fresh way. It was like, it was really towing that line between the familiar and the fresh.
Yeah, and the fantastic thing about that is this game, spoilers, is going to sell millions of copies, and a lot of them are going to be to kids who have maybe never introduced themselves to Spider-Man before.
Yeah.
So their first Spider-Man, like when these kids are sort of explaining Doc Ock to us old people in 10 years, is going to be like, no, that's not his origin story. It goes like this.
I know.
Which is really, really cool.
Yeah, it's... I didn't even think of it like that.
Whoa. Yeah.
Well, it's also like, in addition to finding that balance between the expectations and what you delivered on, like you guys showed an incredible amount of restraint with what you put in the game. I think having an open world and the entire spider universe to play with, it's got to be hard not to throw every villain you can in there.
Yeah, it was. I mean, there's probably another certain big character that people always ask me why isn't that character in the game, that villain in the game. Yeah, I think it's doing what's right for the story and making sure that, like I said, it really is about hitting a quality bar. I think we really wanted to not just throw the kitchen sink at it. You know, something I talk a lot about with the team, and I talk actually our lead programmer Doug Sheehan, we're really close friends, and we talk about games all the time. Is the best games are usually the ones who are the most cohesive experiences. So we really try to push the cohesiveness, and anything that kind of detracts from that, we try to strip away. And I think, you know, we had successes in there. I think there's things we can do better going, you know, with every game we make. But that was really part of it. It's really delivering that cohesive experience at a really high quality.
So obviously spreading like a story this size across a world this size and then, you know, having it be paced evenly is tricky.
It's a nightmare.
Yeah. Did you have sort of like a handful of like tentpole kind of parts of the stories that you just filled in the blanks with?
Yeah. So, I mean, I think we always said we want to start with taking down Wilson Fisk. I thought that, a super well-known Marvel villain, you never expect him to go away after the first mission.
Right. Right.
And I think a lot of people are like, well, is he going to come back? He doesn't come back. There's a reason for that. Cause I wanted people to say like it's basically the end of another story. It's basically end of another story. And that was really important to us, but I think it was taking down Fisk. It was the rise of Martin Lee and the Inner Demons, the City Hall event, the Sinister Six, and then the finale. Those were kind of the big tentpole moments. And then everything in between kind of, evolved. You know, we had like inspiration, like, wouldn't it be cool to have a Halloween party? Like, and could we make that work? Those kind of things. I always wanted to do something in Grand Central. I thought that would just been really fun.
That is, I think, my favorite level in the game because of how it's subverts expectations.
Yeah, I mean, you never think you're going to be playing as MJ and Spider-Man's going to be like up in the rafters, like, you know, taking guys down like that.
Again, I've spent a lot of time in that train station and I was walking around and I was just kind of like, man, they nailed it.
I know. It's really, really.
Like, I wanted to go downstairs and get oysters.
The artist did an amazing job on that. And it was funny. I was just in New York a couple weeks ago when I was walking around. I was like, A, I love the city, and B, I was just like, we did a pretty good job. We did a good job.
It's going to be hard to go back there and not be able to run directly up a wall.
Well, it was funny. Ryan Schneider, our brand director, who actually helped me get my job at Insomniac, he was visiting New York, I think it was like either July or August, and he got out of the subway, and he knew which way to go based on playing the game. And I was like, what? I was like, well, that's cool. Like, that's pretty cool.
You guys are going to do great stuff for the tourism of that city. I think a lot of people are going to go visit.
Yeah, I hope so.
And then try to climb up walls.
Yeah, I know. Yeah.
They'll be confused when ESU isn't exactly there, but they'll see then while you build it.
There's always that bizarre sort of dreamlike deja vu thing when you get more familiar with the video game version of a location than the actual one.
Yeah. It was weird being able to go to my apartment complex and see the building that I lived in there, but knowing that the park next to it's a little different. So when I go back and visit in a little bit, it's going to be like, oh, wait, that's
It's like when I came back to San Francisco, I didn't really recognize
it. If you're in New York and there's a tourist bus that promises you can see Avengers Tower, they're lying.
Yeah.
That's in Saigon, weirdly enough.
Really?
Ho Chi Minh City, yeah.
Impressive.
Going a little bit back, speaking of the Grand Central scene, I did want to talk a little bit about, before we run out of time, Mary Jane's place in all of this.
Yeah.
Because I do love the way you play the relationship off of one another, and especially having her, Max and I had been talking about this, the decision to have her be the journalist. Where did that decision come from?
Remember I talked about the idea of worlds colliding, this idea of the coming of age story for Peter, this idea of partnership, and I thought MJ would be great at that. And I wasn't sure how to make that work with her being a model or an actress. And I also felt like that storyline and that, personally didn't appeal to me as much. And I know some fans are really passionate about her being that role. I want her to be in a role where I felt like she could be much more capable and a much more capable contributor to the story and the experience. So we kind of went back and forth about what could she be. And we thought, well, a journalist is someone who could be on the front lines. It could be somebody who's going after the story. We just thought it was kind of a natural fit. And you remember you asked me a question about pacing? It is a 20-plus hour story. We playing as Spider-Man the whole time is like, feel like you're always at a 10, right? Whereas like playing as Pete and Miles brings things down sometimes just a little bit. It's like a change of pace. So that was one of the reasons why we made them playable. But at the same time is, I think if you got to actually be them, you felt like their arc was much more fleshed out. And that it just means a little bit more. So that's why we decided to make them playable. And I just thought that defying expectations, I don't think anybody, when we heard we were making a Spider-Man game, thought you were going to play as MJ.
Right.
And I think that it's kind of interesting to actually play as a quote-unquote normal person in a superhero world. Play someone who doesn't have any powers, but you're actually in that superhero world. So that was kind of the reason. But I really think it helped. MJ really helped support Peter's arc. And at the same time, whereas like his story arc with her is like, he understands I may have superpowers, I may be super strong, but at the end of the day, I do need help. It's okay to lean on others. I think she learns, you know, at the end of the day, it's okay that he loves me and he's going to save me when I am in that moment. So like when she jumps off the balcony, that's her saying like, you know what, Pete, I need you now. Like, you know, you trusted me to go into Norman's place and get through the stable agent to get the information we need. Okay. But I'm going to trust you now to let you know what you're going to, I need you to save me. It's okay. I've pushed that away for a while because I wanted you to prove to you that I could do this. But you know what? I'm also now going to say, I don't have superpowers and I need that help. So that they both actually learn something at the end of the day. And I think that's what, you know, at the very end, they are back together, that you see them kiss at the restaurant. So it's not just Peter changing to help save the relationship. It's actually she's changing as well. She's accepting the help, whereas for so long throughout the game, she was pushing away because she didn't want to be the one who's always saved.
And circling back toward the end there a little bit, I love how you leave some things open, but you do really try to put a cap on like this part of Peter's life in a lot of ways, obviously, with the passing of Aunt May.
Yeah.
And then MJ and Peter reuniting and all of that. But what was the give and take with you guys wanting to sort of encapsulate the story, but also leave threads open? Obviously, we see, you were mentioning Norman before, and I think his place in the story is really fascinating.
Yeah.
And I see the slight smile on your face.
Yeah. I mean, I think you want a little bit of both. I mean, again, I'm probably gonna, branch in Marvel Studios again, but I think they do a great job of like, you go there for two and a half hours and you want a satisfying ending, but you want to leave them with a little bit more. What could the future hold if there is a future? And I think that was our balance. So like, we wanted to have, you know, this in many ways, it was a little bit of a love story between Pete and MJ. I mean, I think we, you know, like if my funny, Bill Roseman and I, one of our favorite movies is Rocky. And even though it's a boxing movie, it really is just a love story. It's a love story between the two. We wanted to have that romance. I think it's an important part of Peter's the Spider-Man universe. But we wanted to have questions that people may talk about or debate, and what the future could hold.
I mean, with the Marvel Studios movies, like they end, and you know it's a 2-hour experience, and the next one comes out in 5 months or whatever. So you're left being like, oh, what's going to happen next? But it's unusual to have like a 30-hour video game where it finishes, and you're like, I don't know when the next one is, but I want to know what happens next, and to sit around speculating about it.
Yeah. Well, these things take a long time to make. So I think
what are you doing here, man? Get
back to work. I know. It's funny. Maybe it's because I haven't, you know, I mean, I've been working on this for, you know, 3.5 years now, and I haven't made a game in a while, but like the amount of people who've already platinumed the game, and I'm like this game is not short. It's not a short game. And I'm like, and they're like, so when's the sequel coming out? And I'm I just need to breathe right now.
Don't make a great video game if you don't want people to platinum.
No. I didn't think that they would like do the marathon. Like just, right. I think like, The thing I kind of said, I kind of fell over the weekend was, wow, like I've been that person who's just like marathoned a game and like played it as much as I could. I remember like when Metal Gear Solid 4 came out, I was like, woke up at 5:30 in the morning, played it to like 2:30 in the morning. Like I did the full thing and I finished it like in 2.5 days. And I'm like, why am I surprised that people are doing the same thing with Spider-Man? So it's pretty cool.
I have two jobs and a newborn, and I was like, I got 100% this game.
That's great.
And I was one of the first people to do it, and I was like, I can't talk about it for a while. Why did I do this?
And I think the thing is, you know, everybody's like, I want more. And the great thing is we will have it. We're gonna have DLC throughout the year, throughout the rest of the year. And like, it's gonna have new characters, it's gonna have new stories, it's gonna have new suits. There's some really fun suits in those drops, so I think people are going to be pretty happy.
When you guys demonstrated in the base game that you're good at sort of at not just dumping the entire bucket of sugar on the table for the kids to eat up, it's sort of like, you know, take your time, maybe bake it into a cake and serve it in slices, like portion it out, you know,
I like that.
Kids love a table full of sugar.
I don't know, but no, that's I mean, you want to see a bucket of sugar? Look at Spider-Man 3. You just throw a bunch of characters in there, and it's like one man's sand is another man's sugar is.
That's a metaphor.
Speaking
of that, looking ahead, obviously, whatever may come from those hanging threads, we will see eventually. But
webs.
Hey,
webs. They're web threads.
I like that.
We did reach out, and we touched a lot on the questions that members of the Beyond Facebook group asked. But one of the things I think everyone has been asking is, what's going on with the DLC? What's there? As obviously we know what's ahead.
So we have a team working on DLC right now. It wasn't finished when the game was released, so we're still working on it. Trust me. People were, you know, I was in New York a couple weeks ago, and John Paquette was writing a bunch of stuff for it, and we have our team working on it. First one right now we've talked about a lot is Black Cat. She kind of has a minor appearance in the base game, and she will take a starring role in this first drop. And it's, you know, they have a really interesting dynamic and relationship, and I think you're going to see some, just like we twisted some of the stuff with some of the other characters, you're going to see some twists and turns that you might not expect with Spider-Man and Black Cat, and then that will set up the other two that will be released before the end of the year.
It's very exciting. And speaking to what you were saying, Brian, before about finishing the game, just immediately having that marathon sensation, I've seen so many fans who are asking, but when is New Game Plus so I can beat it all over again?
We're working on it.
I saw that you guys...
We're working on it. It's not done yet, but we're working on it. And cool. I mean, we kind of, as we kind of, you know, we realized you know, you look at the landscape of games today, it's like photo mode and new game plus, you better be ready. And we're working on it. I was really happy we were able to get photo mode done by the day one patch. And I know you didn't get to check it out when you did your review, but I think that next thing is up is new game plus and making sure there's fun stuff for people to do.
And then maybe a sequel?
Well, you made the webs work, and you made New York for the webs to work in. So, like, it's pretty easy now, right?
Yeah, it's actually a paint by numbers. You just kind of, you know, I just hit a couple buttons, and boom, you get your sequel.
But I mean, you can see the love and attention in this game and the story and everything that's built around it. And obviously, I assume it's not something you guys are just let's abandon.
Yeah, I mean, I think that we, you know, nothing to announce, of course. But I think that you know. We obviously want to keep you engaged in our Spider-Man universe. That's why we said right off the bat, you're going to have, you know, 3 drops of DLC with, you know, and it's not just activities in the city. This is like, you know, a full story. So like, you're going to be able to get a pretty chunky, you know, new experience. First one with Black Cat and then the two that come after that.
That's really exciting to see, and I can't wait to play that stuff. As you said, the photo mode came out with that day one patch.
Yeah, we got some stuff in the works for photo mode as well. Nothing to announce, but you know, I think our team is excited after seeing the response to keep feeding that.
Seeing the positivity around the game in its debut weekend, I think, has been one of the things I've been happiest to see in the gaming industry in a while. There's just such a happiness around the fans having the game.
Yeah,
and Insomniac team members seeing that reaction.
It's awesome. I think that. I'm super happy for our fans. I think a lot of them, so many believed in the game, even, you know, after that like 90 second debut trailer that we had, and super supportive of it. But I've been really, really excited for the team to see it and to see all the stuff. Because, you know, yeah, I mean, I travel around a lot and I get to talk about the game. But as I said to you guys off camera, it's trust me, it's not just me. There's a lot of smarter people working on the game, a lot of really hardworking people, and to see them be not only getting congratulatory stuff on, you know, social media. I'm so glad so many of them now are joining Twitter finally, like Bobby Coddington, our animation director. Thank you for finally joining. You're a genius, getting the kudos that he deserves and his team deserves. But them just like being excited to be looking at photos. Like we talked about Gavin, our lead character artist, like creating photo, you know, the Twitter moments so people can see the photos and people interacting with the fans. It's been really special to see. I think that's part of the great thing about working on something like a Marvel game and Marvel property is that those fans are so dedicated. They are so passionate, and we're passionate game makers. So to kind of have, you know, see those two communities coming together has been pretty special. And I'm so glad that the team is getting the credit that they deserve.
Well, and yeah, thank you to you and to the entire Insomniac team for putting that passion. It's so evident in the game. And thank you for being here today to be able to talk about everything about the game with us.
It's been awesome. Thank you for having me. It's like I said, this has been really, really fun to talk to you guys and to know that the game is out. So I don't have to, I'm thinking like, okay, there's 440 bugs that we still have to fix. Like, you know, the thing is we are still looking to the community. We're looking at seeing their feedback. And if something is, you know, something, you know, you're hitting a trouble spot or something like that, we are still, you know, continually working on the game. That's something I think that just all our games these days are doing now. It's like, it doesn't stop. It doesn't stop when it releases the start of things. And we're going to continue. You're going to see that through DLC. You're going to see through, like we said, New Game Plus. And continually, if there's things popping up that are preventing people from having a good time with it, we'll address it.
Yeah, well, it's incredible to see you guys continue to put all that effort into this game even after its launch. So thank you so much for that and for joining us today. Thank you, Max. Thank you, Brian.
Sure.
This has been a very fun Spider-Man spoiler cast. Thank you all so much for watching.
Excelsior.
Hey there, this is Justin Bartha. I made a funny new podcast, King of the Egg Cream. It has the greatest cast in the history of podcasts with actors like Louis Black.
I'm torn by my feelings for two women.
Bobby Cannavale.
You can eat it, or if someone hits you, you can put it on your cut.
Melanie Lynskey.
I wonder what these marvelous things are that look just like boiled chicken feet.
Jason Ritter.
I can break things and pick locks and kill people.
Michael Stuhlbarg.
The whole point is to inspire people that they should make themselves better.
Ari Grainer.
No, don't whet its appetite. What are you, an idiot?
Me, Justin Bartha.
That's not just any egg cream, that's a Lemke's special.
And all narrated by the hilarious Richard Kind.
This is the story of Harry Dalowitz. And how he rose from nothing to become New York's King of the Egg Cream.
So if you like funny true stories, come listen to King of the Egg Cream, available wherever you get your podcasts.